This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi. قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone. Leader of the Islamic Revolution has urged not only Muslims but also freedom seekers of the world to stand against Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described what is going on in Gaza as treacherous and horrendous acts, denouncing the U.S. as an accomplice in the genocide. In tonight's spotlight, we'll discuss the Ayatollah Khamenei's call as well as how global unity and movements can help stop Israeli crimes against Palestinians. And now for our guests. Joining us is Masood Shajadeh, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us from London. And Leila Hatoum, Editor-in-Chief at MENA, Uncensored, joining us from Beirut. Hello and a warm welcome to the both of you. Good to have you both on. Leila Hatoum, we'll start with you out of Beirut. Your opening thoughts, please, on the Iranian leader basically saying that This onslaught has to be addressed through global unity as well as the West, is, especially the U.S., is more of a part, the major part of the problem and not the solution. And it's really up to other world leaders worldwide as well as organizations and anything, grassroots student movements, etc.
Good evening to you and to your listeners as well and your esteemed guests. Thank you for having me again on your show. And I do agree with you, and I agree with the calls that Iran has launched, Iran's supreme leader. I mean, at the end of the day, without unity, you will not be able to deal a major blow to the Israeli monster and stop it. So far, the international community is divided or stays what you call afraid of addressing the elephant in the room, which is American, European support of the Israeli entity. Then the Israeli entity will continue to fly with impunity, and it will never be published. We saw when several countries united together to bring a lawsuit against the Israeli entity, we had the ICC, the International Criminal Court, issue a sentence, actually a decision, considering Israeli officials and the Israeli occupation forces chiefs as war criminals. If we push further and we have more states supporting the right side, supporting humanity and supporting the end of this genocide, I think we will be able to do something. The best sort of unity in this matter is actually to pinch the Americans and the Europeans in their pockets. And that means economic boycott and economic sanctions on European and American countries. That includes Canada and the US, who are supporting the Israeli entity. Once you stop trading with those countries, they will feel the burn. Their economies are currently shaky. So if you deal them this blow with international unity against them, I do believe that they will be able to stop the ongoing Israeli genocide against the Palestinians.
Thank you, Leila. Mr. Masoud Shajari, welcome to the conversation, sir. And thank you for your patience. And your take on what kind of global push, from your perspective, can help further pressure the U.S. and alienate the Israelis to a point we see a quicker end to this renewed aggression on Gaza?
Well, look, the reality is, after over a year and a half of genocide unleashed and streamed to our mobile phones, televisions, etc., we really realize, and if we don't realize this, there is something wrong with our intellect, that we are, as a human being, at the crossroad. Either we challenge this brutal genocide, which we all have seen and witnessed and touched and smelled, or we actually become part of the global arrogance of promoting genocide as a means of creating a future which is based on jungle, rule of jungle, and who is more powerful and who could get away with the help of the overwhelming media, etc., and who could actually master and use and control and give in to the arm industry and kill innocent men, women, and children. This crossroad right now, it is there for everyone to see. And those who are standing to resist this, be it the Yemenis or be it people from the rest of the Middle East, or indeed in United States, Britain, France, Germany, all those students, all those freedom-loving people, all those who are a mixture of Jewish, Muslim, Christian, and people of non-faith, secular people, we all have recognized this, and we all have recognized the only way we could stand against this is not to go and run to United Nations or international courts, because they're incompetent. They have not saved a single life or single child. It's for us to resist with everything that we have, with every means possible. And, you know, this is not very fashionable within the secular, I want to look after my own worldly interests sort of ideology, because if you want to look after number one, then you sacrifice the Palestinians in the same way that many countries, both in the East and West, have done. Here we have got an example of the leadership in Iran, the Vali Faqih, who is standing not because of the personal or national interest, standing because it's the right thing to do, it's the only way to save humanity and the future of humanity. And in the resistance circle, we are all part of it. Yemenis, people in Middle East, people in Washington, New York, everywhere, those of us who have understood what is at stake and is standing, despite the price that we have to pay, we are part of the resistance. And if we hold on to that, we will be victorious.
Thank you there, Mr. Shajari. And Leila, when the UN, including the Security Council, is basically derailed by the U.S. Veto anytime Israel is mentioned, what can we as a people achieve through global protests and sanctions movements? It seems many organizations and leaders actually underestimate the power they have to leverage change.
Well, the thing is, the Israeli propaganda and the Western propaganda always plays against their populations that you alone cannot do anything, even if you rally on the streets. And that causes frustration among the populations. But if the people actually wake up and understand that they can pressure their own officials, it's not the other way around. They can start by, let's say, swarming their own elected officials and asking them, why aren't they pushing towards stopping this genocide? And then they can start by reprimanding them through votes or basically through sending letters up until civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is a legal and humanitarian basically right for people to stop supporting a genocidal government or a government that supports genocide at the same time. And you have to understand the United Nations is inept. It's not only because of the veto power. That body has proven on the, what you call, on the political level at least, and the security level, useless, because it was created to serve the interests of big nations, and those big nations are currently supporting the Israeli entity. How can we impact that? We can actually start by having our people boycotting those nations and pressuring their governments to boycott these nations. Remember what happened with the apartheid regime in South Africa, with international, almost international unity against that apartheid regime, that we managed to bring it down. The only ones who were supporting it were the Israelis at the time. And Israel is basically what you call an apartheid regime, so the international community should come together. If the Americans and some of the European states decide to continue to support the Israeli entity, well, tough luck. The rest of the international community should come together and boycott them, or at least take some security action to stop dealing. Basically, they can cut diplomatic ties, among other things. This will make the Western nations feel the burn of supporting a monster.
Well put, Leila. Thank you. And Mr. Shajadeh, when Ayatollah Khamenei urges a global opposition, and I'm sure here he's not trying to elicit just global condemnation, because we've heard that for years, but actual global action where people, governments, institutions, organizations, including rights bodies, they come together, really come together to act. Tell me how you feel it can help override U.S. and European diplomatic cover for Tel Aviv's war crimes if this actually manifests.
Well, we have seen an example of it, as Lelia said, in the, against apartheid. I mean, I remember being called a supporter of terrorists, and Nelson Mandela was identified by terrorists, as a terrorist, by Margaret Thatcher and the government at the time. And we sort of stood up for what is right, despite that. You know, we stood up as a student, we stood up as health workers, and this is what we are doing right now. The issue is that, first of all, the understanding that what is at stake is not just Palestine, it's not just Middle East, it's actually the future of humanity. And if we fail, we are going to see sort of this type of genocide repeating itself right across the globe. And therefore, we need to stand, and we will be successful. People's power is always have been victorious when people are rising up because they really believe and they are committed. And we are committed ourselves, with our Jewish colleagues, with our Christian colleagues, and everyone else. We really are committed as a community against genocide. And if we allow genocide to be normalized, I know I'm repeating myself, but it's really a huge issue that if we allow genocide to become normalized, then humanity is at the stake, and the future of morality and the humanity is at the stake. We can't allow a bunch of people like Biden and Trump and their likes in Europe and in some of the Muslim world to actually drag us into that sort of immorality and destroy the fabric of society. We have done it in the past, and we could do it now. And this is what they're scared of. I mean, this is why they are attacking us when we are going in the streets and demonstrating. This is why they're trying to force us to make sure that we lose our jobs and prosperity of jobs, etc., etc., because they're scared. But we are not going to be scared with this sort of tactics, and we will stand up. And globally, what Ayatollah Khamenei is asking is exactly for continuation this, for us to wake up, finally realize what is at stake, and give it all to make sure that it will not be legitimized.
And that's a very good point, Mr. Shajadeh. Like, and we have seen it with Trump basically defunding a lot of universities because their students have these grassroots movements and they're speaking up. You have people quick to get the label of anti-Semitic for standing against genocide, and it's just it's unreal. And I'm glad, Leila, he mentioned that a good example of this is the South African apartheid and the movements against that. But another good example that applies to the Zionist entity is the fact that arrest warrants issued for Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, his ex-war minister, and then the fact that a lot of countries immediately, you have one organization issues the warrants, an international body, then you have world leaders, a lot of countries saying if they step foot onto our soil, they will be apprehended. Then you have activists on a third layer of action doing what? Going after other occupation force soldiers when they're traveling abroad to see, to identify them, use social media to basically mention their war crimes in Gaza, their role in what they did, and see if their respective governments take action. So this is a snowball effect, a domino effect that can work if people unify and allow it to basically realize itself.
Yes, I mean, I do agree with you on that. My only fear is that we are fighting against time. The Palestinians don't have enough time. I mean, at the end of the day, the Israelis continue to carpet bomb them. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. Gaza has been under siege since 2008. Nothing comes in or out without the approval of the Israelis. And when they close all the borders, because they actually control all the border crossings, the Palestinians are stuck in the middle and they are being carpet bombed. I've spoken to one of my friends who is in Beit Lahia today. That's the northernmost part of the Gaza Strip. And he said, we haven't slept throughout the night. And I had spoken to him in the morning and the sounds of bombs. And he said, they're using something new. The sound of explosions and the missiles that they're launching is completely different than what they used over the past 15 months. So the Israelis don't care. They're actually after ethnic cleansing Gaza and annexing the West Bank. So if we continue to start waiting for others to stand up and support what's right, we are going to lose more Palestinian souls on the ground, including women and children. We saw 2 days ago, the Israelis killed over 400, nearly 500 people. More than two-thirds of them were women and children. For how long do the Palestinians have to stay in their grounds and stand there and wait? We should start mobilizing now. For those who are sitting there and say, like, my vote doesn't count or my action doesn't count, your action counts. Start by boycotting. Start by basically pressuring your own officials. They don't have time, but you have the ability to go up and stand against your officials and pressure them.
Thank you, Mr. Shajare. Part of the global order, obviously, are also the neighbors of the Palestinians, Arab leaders, who can use a number of tools at their disposal if they choose to forge some unity and stand globally against Israel's atrocities, especially their control over the world's energy resources. They could just, that's one of the tools they have that could have, you know, their control over fossil fuels to stand firmly for Palestinians. Why don't they exercise the right? Why are they so timid in the face of U.S. threats and intimidation?
Well, look, I don't think we should hold our breath for them to come and save the day on 11th hour. The reality is that it is us and them. But this us and them is not based on religion, is not based on ethnicity, is not based on anything except understanding that are we going to do the right thing or we are not? Are we standing up for justice, for the future of humanity, or we are not? And unfortunately, you know, as I said, you know, on our side, those who are resisting, we have a tremendous a spectrum of people who are standing for justice. But unfortunately, equally, when it comes to the leadership of the world, we are seeing on the other side is not just United States, Israel, and Europeans, but we do have many Muslim and Arab leaders who are part of the problem rather than the solution. And I agree with Leila that we need to mobilize everyone, everywhere, not just in the West, but, you know, in places like Jordan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, everywhere else. We all have to rise up to this challenge and to this discharging our responsibility. Only then we will be victorious. And, you know, I would say that, you know, we shouldn't lose confidence. Together, united, standing for justice, we will, and I repeat this, we will be victorious. Only we need to understand and have the self-confidence and do whatever we can to make sure that that these criminals, be it in London, New York, Paris, Istanbul, or Jordan, or anywhere else, will not get away with this.
And you know, Leila, I have to agree with Mr. Masoud Shajare that your remarks about global mobilization is the moral of this very spotlight program. that while everyone around the world is appalled by the 16 months, near 16 months of genocide against Palestinians, that they could step up, that their unity, their solidarity, to your point, better this time around to elicit change, to address the crisis, that by raising the volume of this opposition, that change is attainable.
Well, change is definitely attainable. I mean, look, it's not only the apartheid regime in South Africa that the students and the civil society and grassroots organizations across the world managed to topple by pressuring their governments and their officials. Vietnam War, for example, it started with sit-ins and protests and violent protests by students in the United States that even the authorities couldn't stop at one point or another, and it expanded until the Americans had to stop and withdraw from Vietnam. The same thing can be applied to what's happening in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria, because the Israelis continue to occupy these three Arab states. And you have, I do agree with your guest. I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath when it comes to Arab leaders. I am an Arab myself, and I'm a Muslim. At the end of the day, 57 Islamic states and 22 Arab countries, none of them has taken material and actual effective steps towards stopping the Israeli entity. In fact, some of them continue to do trade, direct trade and indirect trade with the Israeli entity and invest in the Israeli entity. And if it's not in the Israeli entity, then basically with the United States, which actually supports the Israeli entity. We recently saw more than $600 billion being invested by Saudi Arabia in the US. That's basically a promise to invest. I think it's hush money. And today it was announced that the UAE is actually investing about $25 billion in the US AI industry. Most of that industry basically is run by Israelis who use that technology to kill Palestinians and pinpoint resistance leaders and kill them. Mm. I mean, at the end of the day, you cannot change anything. Might as well just sit silent and don't do anything. Don't go and invest your money into entities that support this genocide.
And you know, Mr. Shajada, there's really no, the sky is truly the limit if we see that kind of coordinated mobilization worldwide. And it could go beyond stopping today's genocide in Gaza. It could actually lead to the end of the occupation and a celebration of the liberation of Palestinians and all of Lebanese and anyone else oppressed by this U.S.-Israeli agenda of expansionism.
Absolutely. I think we need to recognize how the environment has changed. In reality, we are more united. Those of us who are standing against genocide are more united across different religion, across different parts of the world, and in the support of resistance as a global movement. And I have never remembered such a sort of unity. This unity exists now between people of left and, you know, Jewish community, Christian community, Muslim community, people who have never stood up and been campaigners are in the streets every week and every other week and every other day. We just need to build upon that, the confidence that together we will be able to do this, and the fact that be it a university students in United States, London, Paris, New York, anywhere, we are united with the global resistance, and we are part of that resistance against genocide, and we will be victorious, and we need to make sure others who are seeing the atrocity being committed will actually wake up that, yes, indeed, they could do something about it, and they could be part of this movement, and we will be victorious.
Thank you both for joining us in the program. Time has gotten the better of us. Stay safe to both of you. Mr. Masoud Shajada, they're joining us from London, and also Leila Hatoum, they're joining us from Lebanese capital, Beirut. And that brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM, 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ali baytihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin. Brothers, sisters, listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al Musawi. Previously, we were turning the key of having to help and maintain and sustain the poor and less fortunate in our society. And we said Allah has prepared reward for those who take care of them, prepared punishment for those who neglect them, and so on and so forth. One of the rewards that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has, which is something that we need for the taking care of the poor and less fortunate, is that they can intercede on the Day of Judgment. Look at this hadith. Imam As-Sadiq salamullah alayhi says, when the Day of Judgment happens and Allah gathers all the humanity in the plains of the Day of Judgment, Allah will bring one of the angels and he says to him, okay, call, talk. And the angel will say, the angel will call amongst the humanity and he says, where are the poor people of humanity? Then obviously the poor will rise up and then Allah will put them aside. And then Allah will say to those who are poor, look at all this humanity, look at all these billions and billions of people. Look at their faces carefully, one by one. Whoever amongst this humanity, among this creation of mine, look at their faces, be careful, look at them carefully. Whoever amongst them have done a favor for you, gave you food, helped you with something, helped you with the house, whatever it might be, take his hand and admit him to heaven. So obviously the poor people themselves, they're like, oh Allah, we had no houses, we had no businesses, we had no money. So Allah is obviously, he's not going to question them for this world. So he's going to admit them to heaven. But before he does that, he says, look around. If anyone has ever helped you, then take his hand to heaven. And this kind of intercession, this kind of shafa'ah, we definitely need. So the more causes we leave for ourselves to get shafa'ah from Allah, from the Ahlul Bayt, from the mu'mineen, we should
and especially from the fuqara, those who are less fortunate. Give them, so on the Day of Judgment, they will admit you to heaven. And also, not just that, but sometimes we ask Allah for many things, and Allah might not answer us, might not give it to us. But if you get a faqir, if you get a poor, less fortunate person to pray for you, Allah will accept his prayer. Imam Sajjad Salamullah alayhi said, دَعْوَةُ السَّائِلُ الْفَقِيرُ لَا تُرَدْ. The prayer and the dua, the supplication of a poor person does not get rejected. So sometimes, I don't know, maybe we need to act clever and smart in order to get our needs. Go find a poor person, give him money, take care of him, help him out, and ask him, please pray for me. And obviously, he will genuinely pray for you because you've helped him. And he would ask Allah from the depths of his heart to take care of you. And Allah will do so. So that's a cheat, as we say, in order to get what you want. Again, Allah wants us to move further and help those who are in need. I don't know what else can Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala say to us in order to get us to help those who are less fortunate. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. Now, before we conclude with this episode, there's one thing that we have to be mindful of, and that is the etiquettes and akhlaq, ethics and morals, of how we should give to those who are less fortunate. Sometimes the method of us giving to them is not appropriate Islamically. Sometimes us giving them will cause them more harm than good. So the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they also have something to say in this regard. Imam As-Sadiq salamullah alayhi says, anything that is obligatory upon you to do, then doing it publicly is better than doing it secretly. Why? Because this way you get encourage people to pay their zakat, to pay their khums. However, baynama yustahab, it's really recommended that when you give people, you give them secretly if it's not wajib, because you don't want them to feel that you are doing them a favor in front of people. When people used to come to Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi and they ask him for help and ask him for money, he would go inside the house. He will take a sack of gold and he would hand it to them from the door, from the behind the door, so he doesn't see their faces. And when he asked about that, he said, why don't you just look at them? Isn't that, aren't you mistreating them? He's like, no. Oh, actually, the opposite, on the contrary, I don't want to see the humility on their face. Because when you give them, they feel humiliated that you're giving them something.
So I said, I don't want to see that. I want them to feel, you know, good. Like, oh, if they take it, no one saw that, and they go. And this was the method of the Ahl Bayt, salamullah alayhim. So sometimes when we give, you don't have to make it, you know, known to people that you just throw cash at them. At the end of the day, they're human beings. They have feelings like me and you. The more secretive you do it, the nicer you do it, the more Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will accept. And Allah says, hadith from Imam Sadiq salamullah alayhi, when he translates and comments on this verse, verse 271 of chapter Al-Baqarah, وَأَن تُخْفُوهَا وَتُؤْتُوهَا الْفُقَرَاءَ فَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. If you hide it and you give it to the poor, it's much better to you. Then the Imam says, هِيَ سُوَ الزَّكَاةِ. This is except the zakah. So whatever charity you want to give to the poor, make it done in a secretive way. But when it comes to zakah, he says, where's zakah? Because it is wajib. So it has to be done publicly, not, you know, keeping it secretly. So brothers and sisters, remember that sometimes we meet people on the street, beggars, and sometimes people will ask us for help. Sometimes people might knock on our doors. Sometimes someone comes and tells me that Fulan is in need. Now, the human nature itself, the an-nafs al-lawwama or an-nafs as we call it, the bad one, right? Alhamaha fujuraha wa taqwaha. The one that has this fujur in it wants to brag about it, wants to show off about it, wants to feel good about giving people. So therefore, just wants to show off. So we have to be very careful that when we give, we are giving for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and not so people can say to us, oh, mashallah, look at him. He's giving so much to people. He's helping this and helping that. Whenever we give, remember, whenever you give a poor person or a person in need, you are literally giving it to Allah. So make sure that we do not do minnah and favor on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The decline of U.S. imperialism is an undeniable and critically important fact that must be integrated into the worldview of the Global South, and Iran's resistance has played a decisive role in exposing this reality and revealing the true nature of the enemy by educating the global majority that the United States wants to deceive the world public opinion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, U.S. President Donald Trump received his answer even before his letter reached Tehran. This is the kind of power discourse that Iran continues to generate as a major global power. While much of the world is fearful of the new U.S. administration, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, stands out as a model for the global majority, demonstrating how to firmly reject imperialist bullying and threat. Iran's role continues to be critical. Unlike both Western-backed regimes and even other sovereign nations that negotiate out of fear, Iran does not seek peace on imperialist terms. It does not extend one hand for diplomacy while submitting to economic blackmail and military threats with the other. The message is clear. Real peace cannot be imposed or dictated by oppressors. It must be won by the oppressed. No country has suffered from American imperialism as severely as Iran, making it both logical and necessary for Iranian leadership to work toward reducing the hardships of its people. In 2015, President Hassan Rouhani mobilized society and ran his election campaign under the slogan of removing sanctions through diplomacy and engaging with the international community. However, the so-called honeymoon period following the JCPOA agreement failed to bring tangible improvements to the daily lives of ordinary Iranians. The government's position at the time was that both the nuclear program and the economy should function together, and the way to achieve this was through an agreement with the West to lift sanctions. This assumption that the West was reliable and would uphold its commitments was a serious miscalculation. 3 years later, Trump took office and shattered the democratic facade of U.S. policy toward Iran. The hypocrisy was not on the agenda anymore. White supremacy was being served raw and plain. No process or manipulation was needed. Unlike previous U.S. administrations that framed their imperialist agenda with a thin layer of diplomacy, Trump abandoned pretense. Previous administrations inflicted harm with a smile, masking their aggression behind rhetoric. Trump's openly hostile approach made it harder for American hegemony to maintain its deception. But beneath both tactics, whether a handshake or a threat, the reality remained unchanged. White supremacy and violence, both in essence and in action. At the time, the leader of the Islamic Revolution warned the government of the time about its misplaced trust in the West and predicted the consequences of the deal. Over the years, he has framed resistance from different perspectives, consistently exposing the imperialist nature of the enemy's behavior. This reflects a fundamental aspect of Iran's approach. The governments make decisions, while the leader provides guidance on what best works for the sake of national sovereignty and interests. Society, in turn, learns from experience, both domestically and internationally, adapting and growing through lessons. A recent speech in a meeting with university students clarified the government's direction. The Iranian people have already traveled this path, and the results they have witnessed firsthand cannot be denied. This is why the leader of the Islamic Revolution stated, "If the purpose of negotiations is to lift the sanctions, negotiating with this U.S. administration will not remove sanctions. It will make the sanctions even tighter and increase the pressure." This reasoning is not speculation. It is drawn from lived experience, from decades of confrontation with U.S. policies that have repeatedly proven their hostility toward Iran. Real peace needs a revolutionary approach to dismantle the current global system and build a new one that lifts the oppressed, protects human rights, and brings dignity and well-being. This kind of peace is not just about absence of war. It represents spirituality and beliefs that liberation is real and possible. In this way, Iran is the revolutionary force and its ideas are shaping a new global order. No country supports peace more than Iran, and no one in Iran stands for peace more than its leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He remarked, "Had we wanted to build nuclear weapons, America could not have stopped us. The fact that we don't have nuclear weapons and are not pursuing them is because we ourselves don't want them for specific reasons." This statement highlights Iran's approach to nuclear technology. Iran has already demonstrated its scientific and technological capabilities, but has chosen not to develop nuclear weapons. This decision is based on ideology, not weakness, even as both its enemies and allies possess such weapons. The Zionist entity, known for its aggressive actions, holds nuclear arms without any moral restraint. Yet, despite these circumstances, Iran has deliberately refrained from pursuing nuclear weapons, something it could achieve overnight if it wished. These remarks illustrate Iran's commitment to peace, surpassing any current global power. And the commitment to peace requires power, a kind of power that forces the enemy to realize their miscalculation. In the current global order, where genocide is normalized and liberation is labeled as terrorism, the power of the oppressed is crucial for continuing the rightful fight and upholding the united front against war threats. This is exactly what the leader emphasized in the meeting. If the Americans or their agents make a wrong move, they will suffer more damage than anyone else. This pioneering approach is what the leader of the Islamic Revolution possesses and teaches other leaders across the world to adopt. The enemy must be taught a lesson to suffer the consequences of their own brutality so that such miscalculations do not happen again. This is the power discourse that pushes back hostility while safeguarding peace and Iran's integrity at the same time. Leader of the Islamic Revolution has always made it clear that revolutionary Islamic principles, equality, dignity, and justice, are not against practical governance. Iran has proved that these values can guide a country without surrendering to imperialist powers. In Iran, despite the global false norm, pragmatism is compatible with ideology, and focusing only on power and material interest is not considered the righteous strategy. Iran is a unique example of a country that can grow and succeed while still keeping its moral values. It challenges the idea that we must give up ideals to get real results. Instead, Iran shows that revolutionary values can lead to real actions that make people's lives better. So, what is the solution for the Iranian people to endure less hardship and live the economically advanced life they deserve while preserving national dignity? The answer has been provided over time. A resilient economy that relies on its own people and objectives instead of having hope in the enemy. Faith in the enemy must be replaced with faith in ourselves, strengthening ties with our neighbors and allies to neutralize the impact of sanctions. The goal is not just to resist, but to make sanctions ineffective, ensuring they cannot break us. This is only possible if Iran's economy is built on the understanding that sanctions are permanent, but we must become stronger than the sanctions themselves. This requires developing indigenous power and independent technology that is self-sufficient. The failure of sanctions must be embedded into Iran's governance model so that the enemy, not the Iranian people, bears the consequences of its maximum pressure campaign. Since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Iran has remained committed to its principles, prioritizing the dignity of its people over external pressures, including the hardest imperialist sanctions. While many countries fear the consequences of standing up to the U.S. and its allies, Iran has remained steadfast. And now, with Donald Trump back in the administration, the chaos is even more apparent. Even Washington's closest allies are unsettled, unsure how to handle a president who refuses to maintain the illusion of a united Western coalition because that coalition does not exist. The decline of U.S. imperialism is an undeniable and critically important fact that must be integrated into the worldview of the global South. And Iran's resistance has played a decisive role in exposing this reality and revealing the true nature of the enemy by educating the global majority that the U.S. wants to deceive the world public opinion. The cracks are widening, not only in Washington's control over the global South, but also within the Western alliance itself. Iran may not be solely responsible for the fall of U.S. hegemony, but it remains the strongest, most consistent force challenging it. And that is why Iran is the heart of the global revolution.
Thank you.